Hey, hey! Welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix. I'm your host, Cedric Jungelman. In this episode of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast, I chat with Nutz von Holm, a former seafarer turned Bitcoin philosopher known as the Bitcoin Infinity Guy. Nut is back for his fifth appearance on the show, where we dive deep into Bitcoin's philosophical, economic, and societal impacts. We explore the illusion of ownership, the power of probabilistic knowledge, and why Bitcoin is more than just a technology. It's a movement towards civilization and cooperation. If you're looking to understand the deeper implications of Bitcoin beyond the price chart, this rip is for you. If you want to get in touch with me, it's Cedric at thebitcoinmatrix.com. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with my friend and Bitcoin philosopher, Nutz von Holm.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Joining me this morning from our first live show in the Bitcoin Matrix trailer is Nutz von Holm, a former seafarer turned Bitcoin philosopher. He's also the Bitcoin Infinity Guy, passionately championed KYC-free Bitcoin adoption, urging followers to reject government overreach. Coming back to the show for the fifth time, where we've discussed things like in episode 15, Bitcoin Through Sovereignty Through Mathematics, one of my favorite Bitcoin books. You're on the first and only Bitcoin Thanksgiving show with Pierre Rochard, Jimmy Song, Katie the Russian, and Surfer Jim. And these shows were done in 2021. You came on in episode 48 for Bitcoin Connects the Physical World to the Real World, one of my favorite concepts there. And episode 106 in October 5th or August 5th of 2022, Bitcoin the Symbiote. Welcome back to the fifth time, Nut. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I mean, this was a great idea. I'm doing a little Florida tour here. I didn't expect this, but it's great to be here. And the fifth time. Holy shit, time flies.
Yeah, I can't believe we've done that many shows together. And we actually got to see each other live or in real life in Amsterdam before this in October. And we had a great conversation on the sidelines there, sort of about like being free, being safe, and kind of how to use your time. So I guess what have you been doing since October to kind of like live that life or that?
Yeah, we have like work-wise, if we begin there, Luke DeWolf and I, he's my business partner and co-author of this book, Bitcoin Inverse of Clown Wars here. Yeah, that had been released already when we were in Amsterdam, I believe. I was selling it in Amsterdam. After that, we launched the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. So the deal is I wanted to give out all the books for free. Like I started this, I met Miljan from Primal in Madeira during Bitcoin Atlantis. And he came up to me and said, "You broke my Nostr tribe." What? I did? Oh, holy shit, achievement unlocked, because I posted the entirety of Sovereignty Through Mathematics as one post on Nostr, and the servers couldn't handle this. They had no like character limit or nothing. So I need to figure out another way to give away the material to, because I don't believe in intellectual property. So we figured out, what if we release one a week on Nostr and make a little video for each and every chapter or each and every book. So that's what we did. And that's the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. And you can join it by our Geyser Fund page and like join the discussions, ask questions. So we have a monthly call for the Mithril Adamantium members. They can eavesdrop on the live recordings and stuff like that. So I'm enjoying doing that. And we're doing that in parallel to the regular Bitcoin Infinity show, which is very much like this show. I have other Bitcoiners on and we talk about whatever we talk about.
Sure. Maybe between the show and your travels, I mean, what do you think about Bitcoin in 2025 in terms of sovereignty and hope and freedom? For me, it seems like most of the conversation is really moved on in a lot of ways. I think there's less voices like yours that are prominent, that are speaking sort of the philosophical concerns of the future of money and sovereignty and freedom, and more about like kind of get rich and Lambos and Wall Street and nation state adoption. And
it's unfortunate. There's a lot of paper Bitcoin stuff, right? And in my opinion, paper Bitcoin is not Bitcoin. Like, the not your keys, not your coins still applies. Always did, always will. So if you want your true sovereignty, you should accept Bitcoin for goods and services and try to acquire them as KYC free as possible and take care of your privacy and use it in any way you can. I mean, it's first and foremost a freedom thing, right? I refuse to even call it technology because I don't view it as technology. I view it as an agreement, some fixed set of rules, communications network, maybe. I mean, narratives come and go, and we'll see which ones have staying power or not. But governments having strategic reserves and stuff, that I guess it was inevitable. I would have preferred if more individuals would have acquired Bitcoin first. But as I said, it's probably inevitable at some point that governments are going to fiddle around with paper Bitcoin and having them on Coinbase and whatnot. And the gist of that is still the only way they can use the Bitcoin is to spend them at some point. So it still benefits everyone in it. Bitcoin is for enemies. But that doesn't necessarily mean I have to like my enemies. So I'm observing rather than having a strong opinion either way. Enjoying seeing this thing play out, however, whatever that looks like.
Yeah, and see, watching how this plays out, maybe we can get a little bit more philosophical. I mean, we were on a live spaces together where we talked about whether Bitcoin is divine. And do you think Bitcoin is divine, or, you know?
No, I mean, I'm a skeptic by nature, so I don't believe there is such a thing as divine to begin with. I do, however, think that Bitcoin allows human beings to be 100% civilized for the first time. So if you categorize human interactions into civilized and uncivilized ones, and you count civilized ones are interactions done 100% with consent with the other person. Uncivilized ones are violent ones, or where there's a threat of violence involved. So if I trade with you in Bitcoin, it's 100% consensual. If I trade with you with fiat currencies, it's really not, because a third party is allowed to print money, meaning that you're forced to use this government-issued money, and they are allowed to take a cut regardless of what you think about them taking a cut. So it's not a civilized interaction. It has a pinch of barbary baked into it. And I'm a huge advocate for directional libertarianism, or directional Ancapistan-ness, like trying to get people to reclaim their freedom more and more and do more and more things without permission, but with consent.
Yeah, speaking of maybe freedom, and like, what do you, I mean, I recently saw your talk in Bitcoin Ireland. I wasn't there. I saw it online at the Bitcoin conference in Ireland. What would be your sort of take on fiat jobs, or what is that, you know, for people maybe like, who do you think it's good to just work your fiat job and grind it out and get everything else you can out of life around that? Or would you take a different approach? I mean,
What I did was like, I worked my ass off a fiat job for a long time, but I stacked and I waited, I huddled, and, then at a certain point, like, the books started taking off and the articles started taking off, and I figured there might be a way for me to actually make a living off of doing Bitcoin stuff. I never regretted that move. So, yeah, I don't advise people to take out mortgages with Bitcoin as collateral, or to loan against their Bitcoin or something. It's like, the simplicity is key, I think. If you can have your stack and just wait till it's valuable enough and it's came up the top, that's probably very good. Spend and replace if you can.
And what would you, how do you describe or think of Bitcoin as hope? Do you still see it as just this wide blanket of hope going forward?
Yeah, that's very connected to time preference. And Bitcoin, as Bitcoiners know, lowers people's time preference for a very simple reason. If you have inflationary money, you have an urge to spend it sooner rather than later, thereby adopting a high time preference, because you know it's going to lose value over time. So you better buy shit so before it's too late. If you had deflationary money, you expect to go up in value over time, then you'll choose to not spend it, but delay your gratification and save and invest in the future to a larger extent. And if you think about what time preference is, like what kind of state of mind it is, imagine the extremes. So imagine if you're robbed of everything you own and you're naked in the forest, and you have nothing to eat, nowhere to live. Your first priority becomes to acquire food and shelter somehow. So that's the highest time preference you can have. And it's a state of fear. People who are robbed of their possessions are living in fear. If you're poor, you're super poor, that's a more fearful existence than if you have a lot of capital and you can plan ahead for the future. That is like the opposite of fear. A low time preference is hope. So that's why I find Bitcoin so hopeful, because it gives people this way of finally being able to secure their future. I believe it's Hasar Mahalpa who defined money as the best possible insurance policy against the future there is. And that's what it's supposed to be. And fiat isn't because it's inflationary. Bitcoin is because it's deflationary. That's the natural state of the free market. I like to ask people the simplest questions. So if a human being practices doing something, do they usually get better or worse at the thing they're practicing? Obviously, they get better, right? So the follow-up question to that is, so why aren't oil prices falling forever? And the reason is that they're printing money. If you denominate the world in Bitcoin, you see that prices actually are falling forever, including the prices of houses, the Apple stock, and whatnot. Most things fall against Bitcoin over time. And that's the natural state of free market. And I think it's a very good thing. And if you start viewing the world through that lens, it becomes way easier to navigate your life.
Sure. And how do you view money printing? Do you see it as this evil conspiratorial thing? Is it sort of human nature? Does Bitcoin end money printing?
It's a bit of both. I mean, there must have been a demand for it. I think a lot of humanity's problems stem from the urge for there to be a free lunch. People want, like during the COVID era, for instance, people were shouting at politicians. They wanted politicians to do something, so almost regardless of what that something was. And then politicians did whatever they could, which was probably a net bad, because everyone, the lockdowns led to even more money printing, and a lot of bad things came out of that. A lot of people became depressed, and I don't think anyone remembers political decisions during the pandemic as, you know, a net positive for the world.
Do you think hope is rational? I mean, especially in 2025, I'm looking at the titles of your book, and it seems like things are getting clownier.
So this re-release of Praxeology is my latest book, or latest release. Clown World is my latest book, like the inverse of Clown World is the title of that one. But I added three more chapters of Praxeology, and the last chapter I added is called What About the Roads? And it talks about, I use the Shawshank Redemption as an analogy for government overreach. So in the Shawshank Redemption, you have this 90-year-old prisoner that gets released finally, and he gets a job at a supermarket, but he's living in constant fear and hangs himself. It's called Brooks. So yeah, you remember the movie?
Yep, totally.
So Red, the Morgan Freeman's character, tells Andy, the protagonist, that hope is a dangerous thing. It's much better that you accept your fate and that you're stuck in this prison forever. But Andy refuses to listen to that. And while doing all the other stuff in the prison, he's quietly digging himself a hole in the wall of his cell and finally escapes the prison. Because, like, if you think you're going to die in prison and you don't do anything about it, that's what's going to happen. But the point is, you're going to die anyway, so you might as well live free. You know, hope is a rational choice. And no matter how high the Shawshank walls that the government set builds around you, they're only true and they're only real if we accept them, if we allow them to be. The Soviet Union would still be here if people didn't, you know, wake up and rebel against the bullshit. So
call out government bullshit whenever you can and do what you can to navigate around this. Taxes and inflation are the prices we pay to live in an uncivilized society, not a civilized one. So yeah, that's the message I want to spread. I'm an optimist. I don't like black pills. I'm much more of a white and orange pill person. I think you have to have a positive outlook on life because it's your last chance to have one. Like you would, might as well enjoy it while it's here. And you, yeah, hope is important. And Bitcoin instills hope.
Do you think life is like a video game? Like, and I ask in the sense of like, so Brooks doesn't want to get out of prison. He's afraid to leave the prison. He likes the prison life. He leaves the prison. He creates a prison for himself outside of the prison. Whereas Tim Robbins' character never wants to be in prison. He finds a way to be free in prison, to have his hobbies and his pursuits. Yeah. And then he creates a way to get out of prison.
Yeah.
And he can even figures out a way to like draw other people like Red to him. And provide like a map and a treasure for them to find their way. Like, do you think life is like a video game and you could just create your own outcomes? And
yeah, the question is sort of, does free will exist? Right. And I'd say from objectively speaking, just because of the simple arrow of time problem, free will probably cannot exist because the neuron in the brain would have to fire off before any decision is made. So your conscious is lying to you when it like makes you feel like you're in charge of your life. And that is factual. But something made the decisions and it was your brain, so it's still you. So I'd say like objectively, we probably cannot have free will and the neurologists are probably correct there. But subjectively, we have no choice but to have a free will. It still feels like you have free will and it's sort of a pointless question. Because if we don't, then, well, I can't do anything about sitting here and answering your question and what I feel is like an answer that I came up with on my own free will. So subjectively, I'm forced to have free will. And that's what counts. Like the axioms of praxeology, for instance, they are true whether or not we actually neurologically have free will or not. So I don't have the answer to that question, but I act as if I have free will. Regardless of if I do or not. I hope that makes sense.
I guess with your free will, do you find yourself going in and out of clown world with like going into the Bitcoin world or the Bitcoin overlay? And now you're dealing with Bitcoiners and now you're out there in clown land. Like, and what kind of observations does that maybe, you know, do you just be a fly on the wall and observe or?
No, I've experienced many times that when you go into conversations with Bitcoiners, you get to, you can bypass most of the bullshit and not talk about the weather or the latest Hillary Swank video. It's a bad example, but it's easier to get through. It's not true for everyone, of course. Bitcoiners are human beings and flawed just as everyone else. But in general, there's more common sense in the Bitcoin space than in normie space. I find networks such as LinkedIn to be very dishonest. Everyone's selling something. Virtue signaling and stuff that doesn't exist to the same extent in Bitcoin, sir.
Do you find that like Bitcoin is bending the world to its will and like the arc is swinging towards less clown world over long periods of time? Or
there's a chapter in there called Pendulum. So there's a pendulum effect. I sort of advocate for, sometimes I see Bitcoiners, but like when, especially recent ones, as soon as they realize that the government is lying to them, they take everything Alex Jones says to be true. And I think that's lazy thinking. So I'm making Bashir a cry for like doing your own research means actually doing research and not just clinging on to whatever sounds good. Right? I made a Venn diagram once with Giacomo Socco, with three circles. So you have systematic academic research in one circle, deductive first principles reasoning in one, and bro science in the third circle. And Bitcoin is of course, the intersection in the middle there. And I think that's a good way to navigate life. Like you need different tools for different problems. For economics, it's absolutely deductive reasoning is the only tool we have in the toolbox. I guess for personal health things, a bit of all three is probably advisable for studying the effects of
certain kind of bacteria on a certain kind of mollusk. Systematic academic research is probably the right method, but like all three have their place in understanding the world.
Sure. I'm kind of was intrigued by something you were saying in Ireland about ownership. Can someone really own Bitcoin?
No, is the short answer. So there's a difference between ownership and possession. Ownership is the legal relationship between you and an object. So you own that coffee cup, for instance, and if you give it to me, I now possess it, but you still own it. And if I'm in possession of a thing, I can choose to give it back, and I can also say choose to say, fuck you, sir, you're not getting your coffee cup back. So I'm more in control of the object if I possess it than if I own it. So ownership is sort of something we as a society decide within whatever legal framework we're living under. Bitcoin is a completely different beast because all you can do is know a private key. So knowing is owning in that sense, and is possession too, by the way. So, but you don't really own the Satoshi. You know a private key, and you find it implausible that someone else knows the same private key as you do. So it's just a probability game. You find it improbable that someone else will figure out your key, or figure out the location of your key, or figure out your 12 magic words. So however you choose to approach the private key. And you also find it improbable that the code will change so much that the 21 million coin cap is ever changed, or any other important parameter is changed. So it's sort of probabilistic knowledge is the equivalent to ownership in Bitcoin, but you're not actually on those. You can act as if you do because you have access to that specific information. But it's all about this information asymmetry, probabilistic thing. This is why it bugs me a bit what politicians and bankers and finance people talk about Bitcoin, because they seem to not get this. They seem to have a very hard time understanding how abstract this concept is, what it is. At the end of the day, like the miner is not the ASIC in the hangar. It's the guy who buys the ASIC, puts it in the hangar, and chooses to download and run the software. The node is not the Raspberry Pi or the Start9 or the Umbro running Bitcoin Core or Knots or whatever. It's the guy that decides to buy one and decides to run the software. And the Satoshi is not really on the internet, because the ability to move it is not on the internet. It is in your head. So every Satoshi lives within its owner. So we are, very literally, we are the Satoshis, which is one of these thoughts I cannot help but like try to promote, because it's so misunderstood, and it's such a good thing, because it means if I am a bunch of Satoshis and you are a bunch of Satoshis, it means we're part of the same being now. So we are incentivized to help one another. The success of another Bitcoiner is the success of the network. So we get into this beautiful free market economy without interventionism within the Bitcoin space. And also, like, it's free market on steroids, because not only are we able to compete on a level playing field, thereby lowering all prices, we're also incentivized to just collaborate and help one another and get into this. It's very utopia directionally. And I like to push that message, because I think it's important and often overlooked.
This concept of ownership for me is fascinating. And I, in a weird way, I link it to confidence. So I think, you know, there's people who might have confidence. They're just born with it, like on third base. And they're just like, and sometimes you find it unfounded or overconfidence, right? But it probably benefits them to have that than to not, maybe in some cases. And then you find people who are just not confident at all, whether they have the experience or not. And I think about that in terms of Bitcoin ownership. Like, let's say someone has ownership of a whole coin, and they act upon that, meaning they have the knowledge they own this coin. It's a part of them. They act with all this confidence. And maybe they've lived their whole life with this confidence of being a whole coiner. And at the very end of their life, they lose access to the coin. But they got to live their whole life like a whole coiner. And take action, whether it was financial or emotional, or people looked to them and said, oh, that person's a whole coiner. You know, so it improved their just whole being. And then they unfortunately maybe lose it at the end, but they still got to live the life, and they never had it. Even when they had it, they didn't have it, but now they definitely don't have it.
Oh, absolutely. I could totally identify with that. Like, if there's anything that Bitcoin did to me was like instill a sense of confidence. Because I knew I had something they couldn't take away from me now. Like I knew that I'm secure. Like I have this thing. I have knowledge that most people don't have yet. I'm ahead of the curve here. And it's insanely powerful. And the weirdest part of that is all we did was find a way to communicate that allowed for that to happen. So we had all of this within us all along. We just didn't have the key to unlock it before we found Bitcoin. And I found it insanely powerful. Like the way I put it somewhere in a talk somewhere was like, the Beatles were right. All you need is love. They just haven't found the equation for it yet. And Bitcoin is that equation. Like, it unlocks something within us so we can wear our hearts on our sleeves and be ourselves. Like, I mean, nowadays I wake up every morning and I'm just myself, and it's such a good feeling. It's just great.
Do you think you'd feel that way still if you lost access to your Bitcoin? Like, is it sort of like a one-way street with the confidence that it's no longer about the actual Bitcoin? Meaning, like, again, you, if you lost it, you'd have the confidence to go out and just figure out, get that back. Because you have knowledge, you can offer value, you have that sort of inner confidence.
I hope so. I certainly hope so. And I hope I've taken the lesson to heart that I can act in this way regardless of if I have the stack or not. Like, it was already there. And the stack is, in a way, just a bunch of numbers. Like, it's very abstract. So there's no reason to not act with confidence, really. But I don't know how I would of course I already lost all my Bitcoin in a tragic boating accident like 10 years ago.
We all did, yeah.
You know, it's very hard to say. I have seen other Bitcoiners though fall from grace, and probably because they fumbled their stacks, and they in realizing that they lost the opportunity of their lives, they go and do all sorts of other shit to remain relevant, to boost their egos. And I hope I'm not like that. I hope I can stick to my guns. That, like, what's that Scarface quote? All I have in this world is my word and my balls, and they don't break for no one. I like that a lot. I try to live like that. I think I wouldn't be here now if it wasn't for the fact that I never took a bag of shitcoin bribery. I didn't promote shit. I stayed as intellectually honest as I could. And it's paying off.
Yeah, I mean, I think in transparency, integrity, honesty, I think these things do pay off over time.
Yes, I think that's the reason you're here too, by the way. I mean, you kept your integrity over the years, and I salute it. It's not for nothing.
Yeah, and I think I'd like to think too that it's those qualities I have without Bitcoin, but Bitcoin, I think, further enables those things. And pushes us forward in that way.
It incentivizes moral behavior. And the thing that incentivizes immoral behavior is not the part, it's the other shift. Like, always has been, always will be.
I've been trying to, really think about just in terms of how much or what Bitcoin can be in terms of what we hope for, like the internet. I don't think it's become everything we had hoped for. Maybe with a layer on top of it, like Bitcoin, it can be. But I do feel like, you know, maybe there's a lot of attempts to capture, coerce, ghettoize Bitcoin, I find, you know, and that, you know, maybe it just doesn't bring everything to humanity, you know, I'm wishful for.
Well, back to Andy Dufresne, I'm still going to act as if it does, because like hope is the rational choice there. And we can have all sorts of expectations of the future, but
it doesn't matter. Like, directionally, you should always choose to be hopeful anyway. No matter how this plays out, it will probably not play out the way you would prefer. But stay on those success, right? Like, just admit that you're a participant, but you're just one ant in a giant ant hill. Even if you run your node and verify all incoming transactions yourself, and even if you do all of your part, you have very little influence over the whole thing. But what you can do is observe it and learn from it and study it and take away what you want from it. And like, yeah, I think that's a more constructive way of approaching
it. Yeah, I mean, for me, I think one of the most incredible bursts of freedom I've ever experienced was the first time I moved like only like $10 in Bitcoin, like dollar value, but a Bitcoin without a third party. Yeah. Like I, you know, and I think that was such a liberating thing. To witness that and be a part of it. How do you deal with FUD, and why do you say everyone is selling FUD?
Oh, yeah. That's a good question, too. But I'd like to give an example of where my mind was blown first, because it's so fun. Back in like 2016 or 17, paper wallets were a big thing, right? So you could print a paper wallet randomly generated. And I did that once, and I scanned the address and then put the paper in an envelope and then beamed quite a lot of money into the envelope. And I'm like, holy shit, it can teleport. Like, it can go through walls. Might as well beam this into a back vault. Like, it's so insanely powerful. And to me, like, I think one of the reasons I never shitcoined is that the thing that intrigued me from the get-go was that here was this thing on the internet that could be copied. And that sounded so weird to me, so alien. Like, it's like someone invented a time machine or something. Like, how can that be? How can information not be copied? And I'm still trying to figure it out. The closest I got is that they live in our heads and not of it.
Well, speaking of information, do you think that Bitcoin is, you know, a store of value now and not a medium exchange? Is it going to become one?
I think the dichotomy is false, and it's creating a lot of confusion, because money is a medium exchange over space and time. Store of value is a flawed term, because you can't store value. So value is always subjective and dynamic. What you can do is use money as a medium exchange and exchange it with your future self. So it's a four-dimensional thing, medium exchange. And I think the dichotomy confuses a lot of people. It's totally point. Money is not a consumer good nor a producer good. It's a good sui generis is the term for it. But meaning that you can't use it in the production of another good, and you can't eat it. You can't use it. All you could do is hold it for X amount of time and then spend it. And in fiat world, we're incentivized to spend it fast. In Bitcoin, you can wait 5 generations before you spend it. and that's a feature, not a bug. It's a beautiful thing. So I think Bitcoin is and should be both a medium exchange over time and space.
And what about FUD? Like, how do you deal with...
Yeah, the FUD
question. And why is everyone selling it?
If I sell you a bottle of water, I'm really selling you FUD. I'm selling you, if you don't drink me, you will be thirsty in the future too. So from that perspective, everyone is selling FUD. And there are a lot of like hardware wallet companies, seed plate companies, every company in Bitcoin is really selling FUD. I'm selling FUD. Like, if you don't read my books, you won't understand this shit. That is FUD. So... I'm just urging people to be aware that that is what's going on. The media is very good at selling FUD. Like, all newspapers and media outlets they're always, the news are always negative, right? But no one reports them. Like, today nothing happened and everyone was happy. That never makes the news. But yeah, stay aware that FUD is what they're selling, and do your research and build up confidence so that you know that your Bitcoins are secure and your you have a setup you can feel happy about.
And so, like, how do you kind of, like, when you, I mean, I'm sure when you're in the airport, you know, you see a TV screen, you can't choose every bit of content you consume. So I'm sure you come across, you know, like, you know, Delta doesn't have enough pilots, planes are crashing, you know, this guy's going to win the election and the world's going to become communist. This guy's going to win the election. It's going to become fascist. It's going to become authoritarian. It's going to become democratic. It's going to be a monarchy. I mean, what do you make of all it? Like, do you just ignore all of that? Do you engage with people when they have their uncertainty, doubts? I'm going to talk about Bitcoin. Like, you know, I mean, a lot of fear in the world, a lot of volatility in the real world.
I saw an interview with the Amish people after COVID, and they were not affected by COVID at all as much as other groups here in the US. At least that's what I heard. So they interviewed them as like, how come you're not affected by COVID like everyone else? And their answer was, yeah, we don't have TVs. And it's such a great answer because we don't know to which extent the mind creates our realities, but what we focus on becomes a reality. If you're focused on one thing and you're only living in the now, so the past is everything that happened, can't change that. The future hasn't happened yet. It's all, everything we ever experienced happens in this intersection between these two things. It's not even a point in time. It's just the actual intersection. That's where we are at all times. And what you choose to fill that intersection up with, that's your life. That's your reality. That's where you're living. So what you choose to focus on is super important. And if you watch a lot of news, like if you watch a lot of CNN, you're gonna think like CNN. If you instead choose to curate your feeds and follow whatever you think is interesting and focus on sending positive signal to other people, then that becomes your reality. If you provide value to others, you become valuable to others. That's a way nicer reality to live in and one where you aren't valuable to others.
I mean, when I saw you in Amsterdam, I was like freaking out. There was like a hurricane headed towards my like prior house. Yeah. It was a rental, but like, I mean, I was still worried about like whether my family was going to stay or evacuate. And I remember just, I mean, we were just talking. I was just trying to figure out, like, do I fly home? Do I worry about this? Like, how do I? And it was nice to speak to you. I mean, you really kind of gave me a lot of comfort, but just talking about like what it, you know, sort of like what reality is and what it means to be safe or not safe, you know, and then to kind of, because then it was, the irony is everything was fine. It was the weirdest storm I ever saw in terms of it didn't look like the trajectory was natural. So I do think, like, it was weird, but like the house was fine. My family did evacuate, but I was consumed
by the thought,
you know.
Yeah, this is.
So happy you brought this up. Like, ironically, sad that you had to experience it, but this is stoicism, like the Marcus Aurelius stuff. If you can admit to yourself that most things in your life you can't do anything about. You can't do fuck all about. If you're in Amsterdam, you can't do anything about the hurricane. Maybe you can call your family and tell them to do this or that, but there's not much else you can do. So like, if you spend your time sitting there at a conference in Amsterdam thinking about this hurricane, then that is your reality at that point. That's what it becomes. And you miss the opportunity of just enjoying the conference. That may sound harsh or like cold-blooded, but for instance, like, there's an anecdote in Clown World here about when I went to the Merchant Marine Academy in cold, gray Gothenburg. I was running through the slush to not miss the bus every morning. Quite often, I saw the bus driver through the rear view mirror glance over at me, knowing I was like half a minute late, but just driving away and not letting me onto the bus. So, and I was infuriated and like pissed every morning at myself and at the bus driver for not making it to the bus. And then one day I promised myself, okay, I'm not going to run to the bus anymore.
I'm not gonna let that control me. I'm going to like walk to the bus and never run, because if I miss it, I miss it. So what? And then I ended up not missing the bus because I was out earlier every morning, and I stopped missing it because it didn't rule my world anymore. And like finding mental hacks like that, that you can like remove stuff you can't do anything about from your life. For instance, if I miss a plane or I miss a train or something nowadays, at the second I miss it, I'm just fine, because I don't walk around being frustrated that something happened, because it already happened. I can't do anything about it anymore. And it's very liberating to find that hack, and just be like happy with what you got. I think thankfulness, one of the American traditions I really like that we don't really have in Europe in the same sense, is Thanksgiving. Like just being grateful for whatever, grateful for being alive. So many people like build their lives around some kind of victimhood, and they are entitled to this and that, that they're pissed at this and that, or annoyed with this and that. And if you walk around being annoyed, then that's your reality. You're going to be an annoyed person. I don't want to be that. I want to be a happy person. So I focus on positive things, and it works. It really works.
I think in Orthodox Judaism, I mean, Shabbat or Shabbos, they have a Thanksgiving like every Friday, every Sabbath. I think about, you know, the power we give thought, and how we can just walk down the street and you could just say like, oh, that couple's happy. And you're just giving that narrative thought. They may not be happy. You could say, oh, that couple's miserable. And you're just giving this story power. And another way to look at it is like, maybe your thoughts are just like on a boat just going by you, and you're sitting on a riverbank, and you can choose to look at that thought and entertain it, or just let it go by you and be like, that's just a thought.
Yeah.
But you know, one of the things I was struggling with in Amsterdam was sort of the thought that like I had made the wrong choice.
Yeah.
So I'm on the wrong timeline. And I chose, and the way I was looking at it, I was like, I chose to come to Amsterdam to have fun, knowing there was a 50-50 chance the storm's going to hit my house, and they're not going to have fun if it goes through, and that we would then take a whole different set of actions if I was there, because maybe we wouldn't evacuate or this stuff. So I was like, in a way, distorting my reality, because I didn't want to be where I was. I felt I was in the wrong place. But in a way, what was great is you helped me enjoy where I was. And my
already made.
Like, right.
Once you made it, be happy with it, because you already made it. I see so many people second guessing themselves, and like, what's the point? Look forward, not back. But it's, as you said, I love that analogy with you're on this boat and the ideas just float by. If you're into meditation and all that, like that's sort of all you can do with your, if you even have free will, that's what you can do with it. You can choose what thoughts to focus on, but you can't choose what thoughts hop into your head. I love thinking about these things, because I think they're connected to creativity. David Lynch talked about this, about like tapping into some deeper field or whatever, and there's a lot of mumbo jumbo stuff, but there's something there in like fishing for ideas. You have to be uninterrupted, and also like knowing that you're not going to be interrupted, so you can be in a state of mind where you allow the mind to play and dream and like float away, and you might find something beautiful. And when you do, like, act on it, create something, and be proud of the thing you found. Like, if a fisherman catches a beautiful fish, the fish is beautiful, not the fisherman. So be proud of your achievements, what you create, but don't let your ego, like, get in the way of that. It's the thing that is beautiful, not you.
Do you ever think about that and map that back on your prior self? Like, just sort of like, if you had...
And I can see how flawed my thinking was in many, many endeavors earlier on in my life. Like, I've learned a lot through Bitcoin, first and foremost, but also through deep diving in the praxeology, Austrian economics rabbit hole, and realizing that it's very philosophical. Mises was really a philosopher at heart, I'd say, and the whole methodology, and stoicism and things like it also helped me a lot, like realizing what you can and cannot do. So like Luke and I always say, like, feet on the ground, head in the clouds. That's how we want to approach all the business we have, because you need to stay grounded and be in reality, but you should also acknowledge that you can have your head in the clouds, have big ideas, and stuff can happen. I mean, my life has taken so many weird and wonderful surreal turns the last couple of years. I'm just super happy for that all of it's happening. Like, just sitting here is like, this would have been unthinkable 15 years ago or even 10 years ago, that someone would pay me to go to Florida to do podcasts.
I wonder, like, what would be the unthinkable thoughts for, like, people younger than us now? And would those unthinkable thoughts become more thinkable on, like, a Bitcoin standard?
I mean, it's that Joker thing, right? You can just do things. Like, that's such a powerful thought. Like, I think it's the same for every generation, and regardless, maybe this is something that is, like, regardless of what monetary system you live in. Of course, it's easier on a Bitcoin standard, because you have this security, you have this hope and this optimism. But we all have these abilities within us. You can just do things. It means, like, if you don't do anything, if you do smoke weed and play PlayStation all day, like, then nothing is going to happen to you. Your life is never getting better. You're like stuck in the hamster's wheel. But if you try different things, throw things at the wall and see what sticks, then most likely nothing is going to happen anyway. But something might happen. And the more things you throw at the wall, the more likely that is. So, like, do stuff, pursue your passions and see where you end up, like, and try to enjoy.
What do you think about the next generation and their ability to kind of pass, our ability maybe to pass this sort of ethos on to the next generation? I mean, like, you know, there might be, like, Bitcoin kids who maybe they're lucky and they inherit a bunch of, you know, sats, and but, you know, maybe the government is like, hey, if you put your sats in the ETF, there's no taxes on when you sell it, and they sell the sats for, you know, yachts, and they say, that's what I want to do with my time, because I didn't work for these sats. So
yeah, I don't know how that changes on a Bitcoin standard. Those of our descendants who can manage and take responsibility and keep the sats and handle them with care, they will win. Like, so it's an evolutionary process. Even we can't do anything about what happens after we die, of course. We just have to hope for the best. But what we can do is lead by example, I think. Like, if there's anything you can do. And this is more true for fathers than for mothers. I think mothers have a different role in bringing up a kid. It's much more hands-on and much more direct. But fathers should be father figures and be a good example for the kid, like, of how to live a fulfilling life.
I'm looking at the books that you've written. Do you think there's a personal arc to your books? Like,
a personal
arc or narrative that kind of comes through in the books? I see it as, like, you know, like, you've achieved sovereignty through mathematics, you ran the numbers, and you're imagining, you're, you know, reimagining independence for yourself.
Yeah. No, I don't think there's an overarching idea. And I think, if anything, like, books or songs or paintings or whatever, they're a snapshot of a certain period of time. And once they're released, they have their own lives, and you shouldn't meddle with them. And, like, don't be George Lucas and go put CGI aliens in Star Wars. Like, I don't want to do that. This disclaimer: these have all been re-edited for slightly better readability. The content is the same, but we've updated them a bit. So that's why I'm saying that sort of. But yeah, I'm super proud of all of them, especially the last two. I have a recency bias, of course, but I think I've become a better author over the years. These are more coherent. Clown World, if anything, has more of a hero's journey structure to it, more of an arc. The earlier books are more like a collection of essays. But yeah, still enjoyed writing.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, and it's almost Shabbos, actually, what are you thankful for these days that maybe we haven't touched on?
I'm thankful that my kids are healthy and that I can do basically what I want every day. What more can you ask for? I live a simple life, but I have very few material cravings. I've found a way to enjoy my existence, and I'm thankful for all of it. Thankful for Bitcoin. Thankful for the giants whose shoulders I'm standing on.
And speaking of standing on the shoulders of giants, let's maybe finish on infinity, and you know, everything divided by 21 million. I haven't, you know, I don't think that's another one. I think, you know, is kind of one of the most powerful memes in Bitcoin that, you know, I think hasn't been talked enough about this year. What are you kind of thinking about in terms of everything divided by 21 million?
I think of it as like, it's not, it's, from a mathematics perspective, it's a ridiculous equation, right? because infinity over anything is infinity. So I view it as like showing people that if this thing stays decentralized and secure, as Kevin likes to say, if this thing doesn't break, then it has the potential to go up forever in purchasing power, not only in dollar terms, but in purchasing power terms. And that's a very beautiful thought, because what that means from the viewpoint of Bitcoin is that all prices are falling forever. So we get into this world where Bitcoiners are incentivized to help one another, and we're incentivized to prioritize quality over quantity. So I foresee this beautiful, almost utopian world where we have an abundance of everything. So access to everything at our every good or service imaginable. But at the same time, we don't crave very much of it. It's a very non-consumerist world where everyone is just being nice to one another, because you know that is more profitable. Bitcoin also removes the profitability of violence. I can put a gun out to your head and say that give me all your Bitcoin, then you can give me a fraction of them, and I have no way of knowing how many you actually have. And that is true for every single person on Earth. Right now, I cannot know how many Bitcoins another person owns, because they don't know they know a secret.
Can we break Bitcoin?
I hope not. I wouldn't know. I mean, there are unknown unknowns here, and I don't know what the future holds. I don't know if Bitcoin can ever be broken. I wouldn't even know how to define that. Like, is it broken if someone breaks the cryptography and finds the keys? It depends on how you define broken. At least in Bitcoin, we have 10 minutes to fix the problem.
Right. And we could always lift and shift, I guess.
Yeah.
So then you're not terribly, are you like following the schisms or all the little petty fights in Bitcoin? Is it a major concern to you to kind of keep up with that stuff?
Well, I'm quite involved with the whole opt return debate, and I like the fact that the community is rallying around a cause, and that the core developers can't just be arrogant and do whatever they want. So there is a cost to that. There is a backlash. I think to some extent there's a battle between the more technically knowledgeable people in Bitcoin and the more economically knowledgeable people, and they don't always overlap. And few people are like masters of both disciplines. I wish they could talk more and understand each other more and do more work on understanding the other side. I am much more on the economic side than on the technical side. I think sometimes the technical side thinks that meddling and fiddling around with Bitcoin won't, they only see it from a mathematics perspective and like a programming perspective, but anything you do to Bitcoin is an incentive thing. Like, you can't predict how people will react, so Bitcoin not changing is better than Bitcoin changing, in my opinion, for the most part.
Yeah, I can see that when it's still alive. We'll see how it goes. I know you have a flight to catch.
Yeah.
This has been so dope. I'll leave it to you for any parting words and let people know where they can find you and your work.
No, thanks very much for setting this up, Cedric, and great to see you again. And we'll see when the next time is. Great to be here.
Thank you, sir. It's always good to be with you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Bitcoin Matrix. If you enjoyed the conversation, don't forget to like, subscribe, and drop a comment below with any questions or thoughts you may have. We'd love to hear from you. You can support the show by checking out our sponsors and affiliate links in the description. It helps keep bringing you great content while connecting you with awesome products that I believe in. Share this episode with your friends, family, or anyone curious about Bitcoin. And let's keep growing this community together. Stay curious, keep stacking, and I'll catch you in the next one.